This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is David Duke, live, internet, web, radio, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of interest to Europeans and people of European descent wherever they may dwell upon the planet. Great to be with you. It's amazing. We have the technology to do a live show that goes all over the world. It's, as I always say, like a 100-mile-high broadcast tower with a gigawatt of power. It's just... It's an amazing phenomena. It's something we would have not even dreamed about a few years ago. Yet today, anyone with an internet connection anywhere in the United States, in South America, in Russia, in China, heck, in Antarctica, can tune in this program live, as well as having an on-demand feature where they can tune in at any time and be able to hear the tape and hear the broadcast as it occurred, whether it's an hour earlier or 2 hours earlier or a year earlier. It's just an amazing phenomenon, and it's a great opportunity we have. And it's this kind of thing which is going to be able to make us change and enable us to change the world effectively. We've got a lot of emails and letters, and let me go to some of the Stormfront letters and email material. Also, you can email me directly at info44@davidduke.com. That's info44@davidduke.com with your questions, your comments, your thoughts, which I will certainly read and share with the audience here today. And of course, you can go to stormfront.org, the town hall section, and share your comments and thoughts with us. This is interactive radio, and it gives you the ability to really get involved in the process yourself. And not only are you going to be heard by me, and I can comment on your questions, but many other people will be able to hear your comments and questions and thoughts and issues that you're talking about. So it's a great opportunity. Okay, we've got a few things. Still a little more feedback from the Judy Andreas issue, this Jewish lady. And I tell you what, she treated me quite fairly on the program, and she's obviously very strongly, quote, anti-racist, whatever that means. You know, I am too. I'm anti-racist when it comes to people who hate and destroy and kill for no reason or try to suppress others. But I'm all for every people on this planet having the right to preserve their own heritage and culture. I think globalism is a tremendous threat and danger to individual liberty. It basically wipes out the so-called diversity. Again, the liberals are completely hypocritical when it comes to these kinds of issues. And they say things such as diversity is our strength in America. It's not our strength. What it is, it's absolutely a tremendous weakness. Look what happened with diversity in the city of New Orleans during the hurricane. Look what happens with diversity in the Balkans. Look what happens with diversity even in Iraq. When you have a common people and a common heritage, you have a lot less societal disruption, hatreds, murders, warfare, and so forth. Now, there's always been a degree of warfare between nations. But, you know, when we had nations composed of its own people, the problems weren't as much internal as external. And now we have a tremendous problem that's really confronting the western part of the United States of America. So, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, here's a post from Spiro, Dr. Duke. I agree that we need people to run for office and push our basic platform of true freedom. I've heard you mention this many times. I've read your books and agree with you 100% on all the major issues confronting the world today. One message that I'm a bit confused or unclear about is the given white national candidate's background and agenda. You said that if we choose to run, we should be careful not to affiliate ourselves with given groups, Euro, the Alliance, Stormfront, etc. On the other hand, these are the groups individuals are individuals that we had to affiliate with to learn our perspectives in the first place. So whether we hide from them, associations or not, we can at some point be linked to them by our opposition. My question is it realistic for any of us to run without getting backlash from our associations, or should we come out of the closet, so to speak, and admit that we are white nationalists? Well, first of all, I think, unfortunately, Spyro, I think you misunderstood me. I didn't say that you shouldn't affiliate with any organizations, because you certainly should, with positive and good organizations. Euro is an excellent organization, the Alliance, the National Vanguard, Stormfront even. And even though Stormfront seems to be a bit more radical because they allow different sorts of avatars and symbols, which again turns off a lot of the middle class people out there that we're trying to reach. A lot of people, if they see some sort of symbol of German nationalism or they see something that appears kind of radical, they kind of turn their head from it. I face that, obviously, with the fact that I was once a leader in the KKK, or a KKK organization as such, even though I was nonviolent and not, you know, acting against any minorities, and I don't think I was even espousing hatred for minorities. But in terms of affiliation, I think it's important that we get away from some of the stereotypical affiliations. And that is, I would certainly avoid any symbols that the Jews have spent so many hundreds of millions of dollars discrediting, such as that used by the Third Reich. I don't think that affiliation with the Klan, I would not recommend it for a young person today who wants to pursue a political career. I'm not saying that I'm opposed to the KKK or people in the group who act legally and appropriately, and there are certainly members of these KKK groups that act appropriately and decently, and they're very dedicated people for the heritage of our race. But there are, again, many people in some of these groups called Ku Klux Klan, which probably are closer to being like what a government agent would say are a Jewish stereotype of our organization than actually what our organizations are supposed to be all about. And I tell you, if you get somebody standing up under the banner of one of our movements and they speak a very poor English and they have only a few teeth and they're unkempt and unbathed and they spout hateful things, those individuals, not only do they not do us any good, they do us far more harm. Now, I'm not saying that's the majority of the people in the KKK, by no means. In fact, I've met some of the most wonderful people I've ever met in my life in that organization. Honest, decent, God-fearing, hard-working, and intelligent people. But I'm just saying that as long as there are a number of the individuals that are doing this, and as long as the media will not make a differentiation between those groups, it's almost impossible to use that moniker and attract the kind of people you want to attract. I mean, that's precisely why I left the organization, because I got tired of fighting that stereotype. You know, I wanted to talk about the survival of the white race. I wanted to talk about, you know, the Jewish supremacist problem, the hypocrisy of the Jewish supremacists, the Jewish extremism is truly threatening not only the Palestinians, but the Americans, in fact, the world. They're threatening our freedoms. They're the ones behind this globalism, no doubt. They are the ones who are behind the Freudianism and the massive amounts of pornography and the tremendous white slave trade and a great deal of the organized crime in the world. And we can go on and on and on. And instead of dealing with those issues, I found myself in a situation always having to say, you know, did the Klan do this or not? And the years passed, or, you know, how can you be associated with an organization that lynches people or kills people? So instead of dealing with the major and the important issues that I want to deal with, I was dealing with these issues that I think, again, you know, that's, we don't want to be in a defensive fight. And eventually you are defensive if you use some of those monikers and you use some of that approach. The same thing's true about people that identify with the movements in Germany during the Second World War and before the Second World War. You have a tremendous hill to climb, my friends. You've got to argue about the war. Many people, relatives, have had people die in that conflict. You got to argue about whether or not you believe in democracy or freedom or dictatorship. And not too many people, even those who want to defend our race, believe in a dictatorship or in a totalitarian form of government. So you have a tremendous roadblock in front of you. And I know there's lots of reasons and understandings that the public doesn't have about all these issues. You know, I've always gotten to a position where I've talked, obviously, about the Holocaust and answered Holocaust questions. I have a chapter in each of my books dealing with the Holocaust. But if you notice, that is not my primary address. That's not my primary orientation. Because I think dealing with the Holocaust, whether or not the Holocaust happened all the time, I think it's good, and I'm glad we've got scholars. And I know some wonderful scholars, you know, Germer Rudolph, you know, and Jorgen Graf, and so many other fantastic scholars out there who are working so hard to get the truth out about both the Second World War and the revisionist position and the Holocaust. But to me, that's not the issues. I mean, I don't want to talk about the Holocaust all day. I want to talk about the Mexican-American invasion. I want to talk about, you know, the involvement of America in this crazy war in the Middle East when we should be involving and protecting our own borders with Mexico. I want to talk about what happened in Hurricane Katrina. I want to talk about, you know, what's going on with the Federal Reserve today, not about whether or not the Holocaust occurred, even though, again, I'm glad there are fine scholars and there are organizations that are dedicated to that particular issue and that particular truth. And if you notice the way I say it, you know, I don't want the fact that someone may believe in the Holocaust get in the way of me converting them to understanding the issues of our heritage, of our culture, of our race, of our traditions, and of the Jewish threat, the Jewish extremist threat, I should say. And so I often say, and even in the book, I don't get in the book and I don't say, well, the Holocaust didn't happen. I say, we don't have the answers completely about the Holocaust yet. We won't have the answers until we have freedom of speech, until we have a complete inquiry, and until people read and hear both sides for themselves. And then I proceed to offer the basic, and I boil down, I think, the essential and most powerful revisionist positions on the Holocaust, and let the reader come to their conclusion. But it's a very subtle distinction, ladies and gentlemen, but it's a very important distinction. If you get up and run for dog catcher, and you stand up and you say, the Holocaust didn't happen, it's a big lie, you won't be talking about your platform. You won't be talking about how well you can catch those dogs and how well you can protect the neighborhood from rabid dogs. You'll be spending all your time dealing with this side issue. And as you know, there are so many hundreds of, in every community, people that are brainwashed in this issue. Millions and millions, and most of the people of this country actually believe in this whole 6 million story. And as you know, there's a lot of good questions about the story. I've even heard people in the movement often say that they're Holocaust deniers. Well, that's the rhetoric that, that the enemy has brought forth. I mean, it's so strange how when we take up and pick up the same rhetoric of our enemies and we think we're really making a statement. Well, you know, denial basically has a connotation that you're denying doing something wrong, or you're denying the fact that you committed you're guilty of something and you committed some terrible or heinous act and you're denying it. Johnny denied that he stole the rubber band. Johnny denied that he dipped Peggy Sue's pigtail in the inkwell. Johnny denied that he stole money out of his mother's purse. You know, and the truth is, you're not having a moral question because you're looking into the Holocaust from a historical and a decent point of view, from an inquiring point of view. You're not a Holocaust denier. You're a Holocaust questioner. You're a Holocaust researcher. You're a person who's interested in finding the information on the Holocaust. And see, that you can defend yourself. You can defend yourself very easily and move on to the real question. You know, if somebody asked me about the Holocaust even today, what I'll ask them, I'll say, well, I think there's a lot of good questions about this issue. We're never going to find a definitive aspect about this Holocaust until we do it. And you could preface it by saying, yes, I know that there were atrocities. You know, I'm sure that there were. But in terms of numbers, we have a lot of questions there. And the only way we're going to get to the bottom of this information, the only way we're going to find out about this information is to really examine both sides of the issue and allow there to be freedom of speech and debate in this issue. The idea that there had been a perhaps between 50 and 100,000 people in Germany, that's a horrendous number, who have been imprisoned for so-called hate speech, most of it probably for denying, so-called denying or questioning the Holocaust, is a tremendous slap in the face of any sort of freedom, democracy, freedom of conscience. You know, why do we have this lack of freedom of speech? But again, dwelling on this issue every day, to me, is not going to save our people. It's a part of the issue. And probably the truth is, in terms of the understanding of the people about this era of history, for instance, the German Revolution, 1933, the Second World War, it's probably the people will probably finally learn the truth about these things after we come to power. But we're not going to come to power on these issues. Even though, as you know, I'm a very straightforward, honest guy. I mean, I tell the truth about what I know to be the truth the best I can. But at the same time, ladies and gentlemen, here's a situation that's occurring to Spiro. I never said don't associate with Euro or the Alliance or National Vanguard or Stormfront. What I said, watch some of your more affiliations. You know, you don't need pictures of you like they have with me with Klan robes and a swastika, for instance, when I picketed William Kunstler. You don't, that doesn't help your political career. You can make a name for yourself by standing up for your people, and you don't have to fool with that. Now, there's a lot of degrees of difference. I know of individuals who got elected because they were associated with me. Now, it's a hell of a difference between someone saying, oh, this person's a Klansman or this person's a Nazi, or saying this person is a friend of David Duke or this person admires David Duke. Most people would say, so what? You know, that's not a real issue. But it is an issue about these primary associations. And I do believe, overt symbols of these that the Jewish supremacists have worked so hard to discredit will hurt your ability to reach the people. Now, I do believe very strongly in politics, and we've talked about this, and Spiro mentions this in his post. I do believe very much so that politics is the soft underbelly of the Jewish supremacist empire, and local politics and regional politics is just the way to go. Almost every state has state legislators. Often you'll have 10,000 residences or even 5,000 to 6,000 residences in that district or families. That's it. And that makes it possible for an individual to go door to door and through your power of your personality, your looks, your ability, the way you present yourself. That's one reason I always tell you in this cause, stay fit. You know, don't get fat. If you can avoid it. I still love fat people. There's a lot of fat people I think are great people, okay? And a lot of fat people I really admire. And I have as guests in my home, and I count them as great friends. But and some people just can't help it, I know, but I guess everybody can help it. I mean, the old thing about your glands don't work, but anymore. But some people have their own problems, and they just can't keep their weight down. I understand that, and I love many of these people. I think they're great people. But listen, if you want to be a leader in the cause, and this is really critical, and you want to run for politics, overcome that. Get yourself in shape. You can do it. Make yourself a strong and good representative of our cause. And when people see you walk down the street to shake their hand, or when you try to talk to them about the cause, let yourself be a representative of a person they see has got his act or her act together. And by the way, in the process of doing so, not only will you be able to reach more people with this cause, but you're also going to have a tremendous benefit in terms of your own health and well-being. And let me tell you something. I feel I can speak about this very frankly and honestly, and I can offer a little criticism here to some people who are not in shape, because I can tell you that I'm one of those people. I wasn't fat. I was the other way around. I was very skinny. Now, I was a wiry, tough, skinny kid, but I never gained any weight. I was always running in the swamps, and I did track and field. I even played some football and all, but I was such a skinny kid. I can remember the time as a young man when I would go swimming. And if I was around people, now if I'm out in the swamps or some of the beautiful tidal pools that we had, or the beaches around Pearl River, Louisiana, or on the Gulf Coast of Louisiana, and there was nobody around, there was no problem. But when I was in a group, as a very young boy, and I was so skinny, I wanted to go swimming in a t-shirt. swim in a t-shirt, I guess to hide the fact that my ribs were showing. Okay, but as I got involved in this movement, and as I grew a little bit, you know, I realized that, you know, I needed to be in shape, that I needed to be healthy, not only for the standpoint of advancing the cause, but also from the standpoint of my own health and energy and just personal power. And we need people with personal power. I also realized, you know, very strongly, in fact, I started my political activities at a very young age, and for a while, I was in college for a while, and I really was so anxious to get to work, I decided I was just going to go ahead and start my political career early, even without a college degree. I figured, well, I already know a heck of a lot. You know, I can at this point, I can debate with anybody practically and win, any of the opposition, that's for sure. I debated anthropologists and people in my university who are anthropologists and with doctorate degrees in anthropology, and I think I effectively won my debates on racial realities. I debated Jewish professors who had PhDs, and I had no college degree. I had maybe a year of college, 2 years of college, and I could debate them, and I could defeat them pretty effectively. I'm not trying to brag, but I couldn't. I figured, well, I'm just going to go ahead and go to work. Well, I went to work in New Orleans, started a group called the National Party, kind of patterned after the National Party in South Africa at the time, talking more about issues, shedding some of those, those politically incorrect symbols, so we could just talk about more of the issues that are important. And I tell you, because I didn't have a degree, and I wasn't a lawyer and didn't have a degree, and I was just a kid wet behind the ears, I tell you, that I got very little respect from the authorities, and they felt they could walk over us. They did. I mean, they jailed me a few times on absolute no pretext at all, and I write about this in My Awakening. So those of you who have not read the book, and you really want to understand, you know, what I'm about and what I'm trying to do, and it kind of gives you a pattern of what you can do in your life, I think you can learn from some of my mistakes. And I realized I needed to go back and get my education. I needed those credentials. And maybe education doesn't mean that much. I know many people without an education who I greatly respect their intellect, their abilities, they're great writers, they're great people. But let me tell you, our people in our cause need credentials even more than anybody in than average people. Because if you're presenting our point of view, the more credentials that you have, the better. And let me tell you, that over the last few years when I was having my difficulties with the government and many other things going on, the books and the material, and I had the opportunity. I met the people, obviously, at the university who brought me in. They gave me an honorary degree because of my books and my work. And when I found that this university, the largest university in Ukraine, was not going to be prejudiced against my politics, and I talked about it with them, and I entered the doctoral program there. And they said, well, you've got to go in this program, you'll be in this program, but you're going to have to follow every, you know, cross every T and dot every I, because you know that it's going to be under tremendous scrutiny from our Jewish enemy. In fact, I went before academic council of 12 people who are actually not only are they high up in the university system, which again is the largest university system in Ukraine. It's internationally accredited university. It's got the highest accreditation in Ukraine, which is 4 for a university, and it's even accredited and mentioned as a level of higher educational institution by UNESCO, by the United Nations. So at the international level, it's a very accredited and fine university. They have many people have completed their doctoral programs who are teaching at other universities around the rest of the world. So it's pretty amazing. And so when I found out they would not be prejudiced against me and that they would welcome me into their doctoral program, I began to work toward that degree until finally, after a lot of work and a lot of perseverance, you know, I completed it. I went before the 12 academic individuals, and I was able to get through the program. And once I was through the program, I had a legitimate PhD, Doctor of Philosophy, course in history. And ladies and gentlemen, I think it's going to be a real asset that I'm Dr. David Duke now, for a lot of reasons. Whenever I meet somebody, whenever I see someone, I'm now a doctor. I'm now actually a professor because I teach at the university. And it's like there's a whole different outlook. I mean, there's an automatic level of respect. That's not among all people. Now, our enemies will never respect me. The Jewish Orthodox, like they do in the Orthodox priests in Israel, the Christian Orthodox priests, you know, they'll spit in their faces. And I'm sure there are many Jewish supremacists who would love to, in fact, would if they had the chance, spit in my face or worse. I'm sure they'd do me in, many of them, if they had the opportunity to do so. But the point is, ladies and gentlemen, for the average person, especially our own people, this doctoral degree has a level of influence and a level of respect, and it gives people just a little crack in the door. Maybe I can listen to what he has to say. Maybe there's something about the man that's not entirely a kook, because all they painted me up before, you know, the former Ku Klux Klansman David Duke. I guess they're going to call me former doctor or Dr. Ku Klux Klansman. Who knows? But the fact that I've completed a PhD since, it kind of puts that Klan even further in the background. So what I was saying, Spiro, is not about your affiliations with other groups. And I don't think there's any problem with being associated with Euro, European Unity and Rights Organization. What are people going to say? He was associated with Euro. And they can call it whatever they want. But that's, you know, people say European Unity and Rights or the Alliance or, for that matter, National Vanguard or Storm. You know, they can put whatever labels they want. They put labels on Reagan and call him a Nazi when he went to the Bitburg Cemetery. They do the same thing with George Bush in some cases. They used to. Now, of course, he's their pet rock, I guess. I guess that's the best way to describe Bush. What an absolute traitor he is to our cause and to our people. It's just really amazing. Well, let me go to Stormfront again, see if we have any more posts. And maybe today is a good day, because it was a day for us to talk about some of the issues. But those of you out there who really want to get involved in politics, and I really believe the time has come for you to do that, I think there's so many opportunities. There's so many races out there that are winnable. You know, get your education. Keep yourself strong and fit. And even if you're not going to run for office, even if you're just going to be one of the followers in this group and you've got a problem being overweight or underweight, you know, get in there. By the way, if you ever want any advice about that, I know a lot about training with weights. I know a lot about exercise. I've been reading about this religiously for the last 30 years. Another individual who knows a lot, and I think Don Black would answer your questions about it. He knows an awful lot about vitamins, health, physical fitness. Don Black, write to him at Stormfront. And, you know, ask him, ask me for advice, and I can tell you, I can give you suggestions on diet. I'm not saying that you've got to follow my dietary rules. I know a lot of vegetarians who are in this cause and who are my supporters and who I think are the world of. I also know that, in my opinion, that vegetarianism is not the best, but, you know, that's not a problem. You know, you can still be a vegetarian, but you got to work hard to get your protein, harder than normal, and still be very fit, you know, and very healthy, and the rest of it. But I can offer you what I think about these subjects, and I can tell you what, you know, where I'm coming from about it. I can't really give you the definitive answer. In fact, that's true almost from any person who's knowledgeable in these fields of health, education, of physical fitness, and the rest of it. And my basic attitude is that I like the forefathers, our European forefathers, you know, I eat a lot of meat. Our people grew up in Northern Europe, and there's not too many vegetables or fruits lying around on the ground in the middle of 12 feet of crusted snow and ice, or during the ice ages. Our people ate tremendous, you know, the mammoth, the woolly mammoth was one of our major sources of food and supplies and shelter and tools and weapons even. And the fact is that I do believe that protein and meat is important. I think nuts are important. I think vegetables are important as well. I know that we're truly omnivores, but our system, our dietary system, is far more like that of a wolf, which is obviously a carnivore, than it is of a sheep. In fact, we have very little of the biology of a sheep. We have an awful lot of the biology of a wolf. And I believe that meat and protein, you can get it from meat, protein, eggs, milk. There's lots of different sources that you can get it from. I think it's very, very important, especially for the young man who's developing. It's one of the best sources of protein that you can possibly have. And I think it's very, very important, especially when people are growing up and developing. Now, bodybuilders will tell you, and these are people with years of experience and have been in competition and the rest of it, they'll tell you that when you're building your body and adding muscle, that you need about a gram of protein for just about every pound of weight per day. You know, that's about right. And maybe a little less than that, or maybe a little more than that. But at least a pound, or at least 1 gram of protein for every pound, especially if you're trying to build muscle. And but we can talk about that subject. And one day we're going to talk about that issue. And this is just purely my opinion. And with this opinion and a dollar, you can go buy a cup of coffee. Well, I don't know if a dollar buys a cup of coffee anymore. And the way the American economy is going, who knows how long a dollar will buy anything. This is from Karsten, and this is at stormfront.org, town hall section. So if you got any more posts, go ahead and do it. I'm only going to be on the air for another 10 minutes or so. So maybe 7 or 8 minutes. So you got to get in. And also go to info44@davidduke.com, and you can send me an email directly. I know people listening who are not a member on Stormfront who can't post, but I do hope people will join Stormfront so that you can post, certainly. You know, you got to do that. So, anyway, this is from Karsten. Dear Dr. Duke, here's a recent news item which I knew would interest you, and since you've been a state representative yourself, please read and comment if you have the time. All my best, Karsten. White liberal stunned as he's ejected from black caucus. A white Nashville, Tennessee lawmaker who tried to join his state's black legislative caucus received a double blow when he was called a racist after he was refused entry to that body and then was compared to white supremacists by a leading Jewish racist. Interesting. Representative Stacey Campfield foolishly thought there would be no problem in his joining the black legislative caucus and called them more racist than the KKK. When the 18-strong body rejected his application for membership, he said that the KKK has less racist bylaws than the black lawmakers group. Black Caucus Chairman Representative Johnny Shaw, a Democrat, dismissed Campfield's request and called him a strange guy who was simply interested in stirring up trouble. Interesting. But that's the kind of stuff that goes on. That's exactly what goes on, ladies and gentlemen. There's such a double standard. You know, that I was, a few people I think are aware of this who are listening to this program. If you read my book, My Awakening, you can read about this a bit in the last section. But there is only one legislative body in the United States of America that actually passed a bill. Didn't go through the whole process, but in a legislative body in which I serve, the House of Representatives in Louisiana, that actually passed a bill forbidding affirmative action programs that discriminate on the basis of race. And, of course, all affirmative action programs do that. Affirmative action is not based on equal rights at all. It is about putting less qualified blacks over better qualified whites, because if the black person is truly better qualified, he's got the whole Civil Rights Act, the whole civil rights law, you've got a whole body of lawyers called civil rights lawyers, you've got all sorts of punitive damages that you can exact against the companies or the firms or the institutions that discriminated against you. And so I had a very simple bill in the legislature. I said, no affirmative action program shall discriminate for or against an individual on the basis of his or her race. That's all it said. And to show you, this bill was very effective, because even though, again, the political establishment was still trying to oppose me, although I had some friends in the legislature as well, it put the white legislators on the spot. And, of course, this should be happen all across the United States. And so they were forced to vote on this bill. And you know what? The bill passed handily in the House of Representatives of Louisiana, because they knew they'd have to go back to their constituents and explain why they voted against this bill. It later did not go through the Senate. Again, it passed my legislative body. But it just shows you, you know, how our opposition runs. And the liberals that voted against it and the black caucus voted against it, they got up and said, okay, here's the bill. No affirmative action program shall discriminate against an individual on the basis of his or her race. So the bill simply outlawed racial discrimination on that basis in affirmative action. But they voted against the bill, saying this is a racist bill. This is a racist bill. So the bill proved itself that there's discrimination. And yes, it is amazing. You have these black organizations and black groups that limit themselves only to blacks, association of blacks, and there's no outcry about this on the national scale or locally. I mean, it's just, there's no, it's just ho-hum, right? Ho-hum. You know, it's a dog bites man. Of course, when a man bites a dog, it should get some publicity. And this should get some publicity, and it doesn't. Spartan says, hello, Dr. Duke. You suggested that it would be wise to get an education before political activism. I was just wondering what kind of degree one should pursue to embark in a career in political activism. Well, I think that you should be active all the way through your education, but you got to decide on what level and how you're going to do it. I think that you have to keep somewhat of a low key in the higher, educational system in most cases. You know, and be very careful how you frame your remarks, what you do, who you associate with, and the rest of it. You've got to do it. But I think all of you who want to pursue a political career have an obligation to support groups like National Vanguard or National Alliance or Stormfront or DavidDuke.com or Euro or whatever. You've got an obligation to do that some way or another. You don't have to be necessarily on the front line, but you need to do that. You also should continue to discuss things on a low level at least, or a quiet level, with your friends, learn the arguments and support. What kind of degree? Well, when I ran, I tried to tailor my degree to the ways I thought it could help my movement. I took a simple typing course because I knew that was important. I took a lot of English because it's important to have a good command of the English language if you're going to be a speaker and writer. I took there's so many things. I took a course in logic, which is excellent in terms of reasoning ability and analyzing how we reason and how we argue effectively. I took a course in public speaking. And it was a very good course. It wasn't really a course in how to speak per se. It was a course in the rights of public speakers, and you can imagine how valuable that was to me. I took courses in biology, genetics, heredity, anthropology. Obviously, I focused mostly, I think, on history during my college career. I took special courses on the American Revolution, for instance. I want to know the mechanics of a successful revolution that goes on historically. I even took a couple courses on the Russian Revolution, which is really, of course, the Jewish Revolution. And my teacher in that course was a communist, but a very interesting course. And I took courses in accounting because you had to have some understanding of that. In fact, it's a very meticulous kind of a course, which helps you pay attention to details. And that's why I think they have every FBI agent, from what I understand. They really want them to have accounting degrees or law degrees, because they want them to be meticulous and in their details and organized. I mean, those are some of the things. I took military training in ROTC. I distinguished myself there. I was the top-ranking cadet out of 4,300 students and won the Outstanding Basic Cadet Award at LSU. Again, I think it's imperative that when you stand up and you do something publicly for our cause, that you understand the importance for you to excel and to be an example. It's important. If you're going to take a course in school, study. You know, don't go drinking the beer or play bourre, you know, before class every day, or stay up in the middle of the night. You know, make sure that I'm not saying not to have some fun, because I believe in good sports, healthy activity. You know, I certainly think that a young college student, you need some time with the opposite sex. You should date and have fun and do some great things. But make sure that your lessons and your studies come first. Your studies, then your physical health. You got to watch what you eat from an early age, getting some good habits of what you eat. Keep the alcohol down. Be responsible, obviously, when it comes to sexual behavior. That's a very important issue. And you need to go ahead and then show yourself to be a leader. And when you are a leader, you will attract many, many people. So what kind of degree? I think you can take a degree in political science. You can study history. You can study anthropology, you can study biology, all these issues. And I took a lot of different courses. I got a degree in history, originally, and ultimately a doctorate in history. But you can take whatever amount of courses and whatever kind of curriculum you want. But you can, and one of the great things you can do is just simply pick your curriculum by what matches, what you want to know in terms of the movement. And there's lots of very effective courses and important courses that you can take. Small business administration, obviously, is a very important curriculum for a person who's going to be involved in leading an organization. Whether you're on a local level or a state level or a federal level, that's going to be a very, very valuable thing for you. So we're talking to some of the kids that want to go to college. If you don't want to go to college, that's fine. But, you know, like my father always says, like he always used to say, and he's, of course, dead now, he says, well, you know, David, if you really like mechanics, if you like working on cars, which I really did as a young man, He said, just try to go into the area of that. It's just the highest area. For instance, if you want to be a mechanic, you might consider in your career becoming a mechanical engineer and understanding the workings. The guy that designs those engines, the guy that designs those automobiles, the guy that designs these mechanical processes. You know, because it's really, that's all just, it's one step up. Or if you want to be, you know, whatever you might want to be, consider it, you know, in terms of being the best. Of course, everybody can't be the best. A lot of people don't have necessarily the intelligence or the ability or even the personality to achieve great, great things. But I think so many of us do. And I do believe with a lot of the self-help gurus, you know, that are out there, that there's so much potential in us. And I've seen so much success from people who I actually didn't even consider that intelligent, but they have become fantastically successful, not only in recruiting the many people into our cause, but successful in life. That have made good money, that have established great businesses, that have a very powerful and wonderful family life and children, and I think that's true for most of us. Let's see what we got here, and I'm gonna take one more out of the emails. Dear Mr. Duke, I'm in the process of listening to your show in which you discussed my letter. It's very interesting to me. Let me add that I missed a little segment of the current issues during the times when the phone was cut out and I was busy trying to reconnect. And that's from Judy. Okay, most of what you're saying is very fair. If the quotations I found were bogus, you have my sincere apologies. I've been vilified for my positions on Israel, and Ernst Sandel and I certainly know what it feels like to have been called names and have my words distorted after my latest essay. I was called an in-lover and sent a death threat. By the way, let me tell you something that happened to this lady, Judy and Andreas. I'm in the process of listening to the show and discussing my letter. Well, I hope that she's listening to this show, and maybe she'll hear this one as well. She got a very nasty email sent to her and called her an in-lover and basically made a death threat to her. And I don't know who it was in the movement that did it. I told her I thought it was black propaganda. I think that was really from someone, you know, probably from the Zionists who were trying to intimidate her, make us look bad. Because the woman, you know, she's of Jewish descent, but she's doing a lot to expose the evils of Jewish supremacism. And again, I mean, she obviously comes from a liberal point of view, and see, she probably honestly believes in the ideals of multiculturalism, and we might have a contention there, but I think we can respect her in that way. At least, she's, you know, I can tell you the most important issue of all is deposing these Jewish extremists that have this power in the United States and this power over our policy. And let me go on and quote to you what she's saying here. When I mentioned the preservation of races issue, I stated I wish I could have engaged in conversation with you. Perhaps we could have clarified these questions on air. I do not mean to make a collective attack against whites no more than I want to make a collective attack against blacks or Jews. That's very good. And I mentioned that too, where I think in a letter that I wrote that, you know, you were making a collective attack when you talked about whites. And actually there are black Jews and white Jews, but I don't know if you classify Jewish people. I'm very familiar with the Jewish elite's culpability in the slave trade. Also, in response to the Jewish response to Israel, I'm heartsick that they're so blinded and brainwashed. This is why I feel the need to speak to educate. I'm thoroughly aware that most Jewish people cannot hear me and have Hollywood visions of the Holocaust. That is a separate issue. By the way, this is a letter from Judy and Andreas, the Jewish woman who I was on the television program with. As for the Talmud, my ignorance is true. I only have learned that the Talmud through my readings on the net. Believe me, Mr. Duke, I was sincere in what I said. I admitted ignorance on certain issues. As a secular Jew, I was not introduced to any of this. And to make things more complex, I've been to more churches and more than synagogues. I was baptized in 1991. I do not disagree with what you said about Jewish supremacism. It disgusts me. All feelings of supremacy disgust me. It goes against my belief that all are one and we are all equal in the eyes of the Creator. The Jewish rank and file people have suffered at the hands of those lies. At least we not forget the Zionists collaborated with the Nazis in World War II, the truth of which is only beginning to become known. I will close now. Can you listening to the letters that you are reading? Well, Judy, thank you so much for that letter. And this is very interesting, isn't it? And I hope all the listeners out there had a chance to hear this, and And we got it right up to the minute, and that's kind of a nice letter. And I think the lady, I think we can certainly begin a dialogue with her. She's doing a lot. And look at the honesty with her. She's very familiar with the Jewish elite's culpability in the slave trade. This is a great letter, and it's the beginning of a. And I can just imagine the heat and the attacks that she received after she went on the program with me. So that's pretty amazing. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think that's about it for the program, and I'm going to go ahead and try and get this up and get this posted, and I do look forward to being with you tomorrow. We're having some great shows here. I think this is one of our best. I hope you contact your friends and make sure they listen as well. See you all later, and let me see if I can find and get our final closing music. Please do your best to spread my website. We're back, obviously, on the air. We are out for about 40 hours. I appreciate all of your support. We're trying to get our houses in shape down here, our facilities in shape, and we're still recovering financially from this thing. We've had almost no mail for the last 2 months. We've got a lot of bills. Anybody can help us, we appreciate it, and I think we're doing great work. I think this program is doing a lot, and I hope that you all who are not yet leaders in this cause will dedicate yourself and truly your life to the salvation of our people, the freedom of our people, and with that, the freedom of all people, because I believe that we're being consistent in what we say. I believe that we're not at all like the Jewish supremacists, and let's not conform to the image they try to present of us, because the image they present of us is actually, truthfully, the actual image of what they themselves are. It's been great to be with you, and I'll be with you tomorrow.
This has been David Duke for our heritage and our freedom.